and you tuned to yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, bringing you an hour of science fiction. Later on, it's X-1 from 1956, but first an episode of Murder at Midnight called The Secret of XR3 from May 3rd, 1946.
Murder at Midnight.
You fool! You idiot! I'll fix you! I'll take you back there and erase that. No, don't!
I told you not to touch me. Now it's all over. We've played our last performance together.
Midnight, the witching hour when the night is darkest, our fears the strongest, our strength at its lowest ebb. Midnight, when the graves gape open and death strikes. How? You'll learn the answer in just a minute in The Secret of XR3. Now, Murder at Midnight, tales of mystery and terror by radio's Masters of the Macabre. Our story by Max Ehrlich is The Secret of XR3. The Death House. A man sits in a tiny cell, his head bowed, waiting for the moment when he will pass from light to eternal shadow. The clock ticks on, but the time is not yet, not quite yet. Then footsteps sound in the corridor. The door opens.
It's almost time, my son.
Yes, Father. I know.
Is there anything I can do?
No. Still, I'm glad you've come. Father, look at me. Look at me closely.
Yes?
I frighten you, don't I? I terrify you.
No. No, my son. Nothing frightens me except the evil in men's hearts.
And am I evil?
I don't know, my son.
But Father, sit down. Let me tell you my story, and then when I've finished, perhaps you can tell me. They call me Gorgo. All my life I've been a little man, only 3 feet high. Perfectly normal in every way, you see, except for my height. Perhaps you saw me down at the Century Theater not so long ago, the vaudeville team of Petrov and Gorgo, acrobat supreme. Petrov was a huge, ape-like man who tossed me through the air like a rubber ball. The audience liked the act. The contrast between the big, big Petrov and the little Gorgo intrigued and amused them. And on the stage, I laughed and smiled and went through my tricks like a happy little fellow. But in the dressing room, it was different.
I did not like your performance tonight, Gorgo.
But what was wrong with the Petrov?
You were slow. You landed too heavily. You did not smile enough.
But they liked us, Petrov. You heard them. We got 3 curtain calls.
We should have gotten 5.
Petrov, I did my best. My very best. Believe me.
Your best was not good enough, little one. Perhaps you will do better tomorrow. If I lock you in your room tonight. Without supper.
That was Vladimir Petrov. A gorilla of a man and master of my body and soul. How I hated him. How many times I wept in the silence of my room. All my life I had walked in the shadows of bigger people. See, all my life I had looked up instead of straight ahead. Endured the stares of the curious and sensed the pity that was in their hearts. And that was why I used to wait in the alley near the stage door between performances, because it was dark there. I loved the dark. It protected me and hid me from those who stared and mocked. One night...
I beg your pardon. You were Gorgo?
Yes.
My name is Dr. Mead. I saw your performance earlier tonight. I was just coming in to see you.
Yes? What about?
Oh, I happen to be an expert in glandular work, particularly in the function of the pituitary or growth gland. I think the results of my recent experiments will interest you.
I don't understand, Dr. Mead.
Did you ever hear of XR3?
XR3? No.
Well, it's an extract, a synthetic, I discovered about 2 years ago. In my experiments to date, whenever I injected it into stunted or dwarfed animals, they grew.
They grew?
Yes.
You mean to normal size?
Well, by using controlled doses, yes.
You mean if you could do this with animals, then you could...
I don't know, Gorgo. I think the time has come to try. Except for your size, you were perfectly formed. Just what I've been looking for. I came to ask you if you'd volunteer.
Yes, yes.
You understand, I can't guarantee a thing.
I understand, and that doesn't matter. Dr. Mead, you don't know what it means, even the chance. A chance to grow to normal size. Why,
One thing, though. I must have your written permission.
My permission? Yes, yes, Dr. Mead, I'll give it to you gladly. I'll do anything, anything.
You speak a little hastily, do you not, Gorgo?
Petrov.
Yes, little one. I'm sorry, Dr. Mead. I'm afraid you will have to find someone else for your experiments.
Someone else?
My little friend cannot act as your guinea pig without my consent. You see, I am Gorgo's legal guardian, and I have the papers to prove it.
No, Petrov, no! No, you've got to give me this chance!
Silence, little fool! As I said, I am sorry, Doctor, but...
But my dear sir, if I can make Gorgo grow to normal size...
If you did, what would become of our act? It would be worthless. The people come to see Big Petrov and Little Gorgo.
Do you mean to say, Mr. Petrov, that you would let your vaudeville act stand in the way?
Yes. I spent years building the team of Petrov and Gorgo. Do you think I am going to let you ruin my investment now?
Petrov, please, please... Please let him do it. You've got
to. Shut up, you little fool, and get inside.
Petrov!
As for you, Doctor, I wouldn't advise you to come around here again.
This was a blow I could not stand. Dr. Mead had opened a prison door for me, and Petrov had slammed it shut again. I resolved then that come what may, I would have my chance. The very idea of the XR3, of becoming a man like other men, made me drunk and gave me daring. One morning, while Petrov was away, I paid a visit to Dr. Mead at his office and begged him to try the experiment without Petrov's permission.
I'm sorry, Gorgo, but I cannot. The experiment would be very delicate if anything should happen without your guardian's legal permission.
No, I'll run the risk, Dr. Mead. I'll be glad to.
I'm sorry, but it can't be done.
I see. Dr. Mead.
Yes?
Just what does this XR3 look like?
Well, I made it up in capsule form. Here, I've a whole bottle of the capsules in my desk drawer. As you see, they're green in color.
So those are the magic capsules. Thank you for letting me see them, Doctor. Thank you very much.
Late that night, I slipped out of my hotel room and down the fire escape. Keeping in the shadows, I went to Dr. Mead's office and climbed through the grilled bars in the window. It was easy for a man of my size, and when I left, I had the bottle of XR3 capsules in my pocket. Well, that was Saturday night. I took one capsule and then another. They made me ill, lightheaded. Then I fell into a deep sleep, and then... A knock on the door awakened me.
Who is it?
Petrov. Why are you sleeping so late?
I don't feel well.
Ah, my little one does not feel well. That's a pity.
Please, Petrov, I want to sleep.
Very well. Today is Sunday and there is no performance. But tomorrow, my little Gorgo, You had better be in the best of health, understand? Otherwise, I'll see that you really become sick.
After he left, I fell into the deep sleep again. And then something woke me. My muscles ached as though I had been stretched on a rack. It was daylight again. It was Monday. My pajamas seemed uncomfortably tight, and I looked down, and the sleeves only reached my elbows. I stared, and my heart stopped beating. Then I remembered the XR3. Like a drunken man, I staggered over to the mirror, looked. Yes, I had grown. I had grown. My pajamas were stretched to bursting. I was growing. I was at least 5 feet tall. 5 feet tall! It was almost time for the performance now. Petrov would be coming for me any minute, and I didn't want him to see me. Not yet. So I piled furniture against the door. And waited.
All right, Gorgo. Time to go to the theater.
I can't go, Petrov. Not tonight. I'm still sick.
What? You little swine, do you think I'm going to postpone a performance because you're sick? Open the door.
No. Petrov, no. Don't come in. Don't come in.
You little fool. I'll break every bone in your body.
I had the key, and I heard a turning in the lock. The furniture against the door would only hold for a minute, and I ran to my valise, took out a straight razor, and then, like a frightened animal, I waited.
Barricade the door, will you? I'll show you what it means to be. Now, my little...
Gorgo. In the name of heaven, what...
Yes, Petrov. I got it. I stole the XR3, and I took it. Now, you see...
You idiot. Do you realize what you've done? You've ruined the act. You've ruined it, do you hear?
Yes, but I'm a man now. I'm a man, not a dwarf. They won't stare at me now. They won't...
No? That's what you think. If that doctor could make you grow, he can make you small again. Smaller than ever.
No, Petrov, no!
Yes, Gorgo. You've grown, but not so much that I can't handle you. We're going to see him right now.
Petrov, no! Let me alone, for heaven's sake!
Don't struggle, you... Razor! No, don't!
I told you to leave me alone. I told you. And now it's all over. We've played our last performance together, Petrov.
A doomed man, sitting in the death house, pauses in his story, recalling the first time the clock struck 12 for...
Murder at midnight.
Now here is Gorgo again, continuing his story to the priest in the death house.
I stayed in my hotel room another day and took 2 more XR3 capsules. And when I looked into the mirror that night, I was over 6 feet tall. That was enough. That was all I wanted. Now I would leave the hotel. They'd never know who killed Petrov. They'd be looking for Gorgo, a 3-foot midget. Never suspect me. Yes, I was in the clear. I stripped Petrov, put on his clothes. They were a little tight, but they did well enough. Then I went through the lobby and into the night. The mere experience of walking was exciting, exhilarating, as though I were walking on a high fence. And nobody looked at me twice. The staring eyes were gone. I was normal, normal. First, I had to find a place to live. I passed by a boarding house with a sign, Room to Let. I rang the bell.
Yeah, what is it? Oh, hello.
Hello. My name is Baker, John Baker. I saw your sign about a room.
Hmm. Yeah. Oh, would you like to see it, big boy?
If you don't mind.
I don't mind a bit. Come in. Come in. It's a lovely room. We got a nice clear of people. I'm sure you'll like it.
I'm sure I will. But first, Miss...
Devlin. Rhoda Devlin.
Yeah, Miss Devlin, I just wanted to say I've been living in hotels all my life, and I can't give you any references.
Forget it. My mother owns the place, and, well, we're not exactly formal. Besides, you look good to me.
I do?
Yeah. I always did go for big men.
Big?
Yeah.
Oh. And I've always liked pretty girls. This was a dream come true. I was a normal man, and a normal girl was attracted to me. She was blonde and blue-eyed, and her head came up to my shoulder. A week passed. A week that was beyond my wildest dreams. I took Rhoda out, and we went everywhere. I fell in love with her. Madly in love. She was so small, so delicate. I wanted to protect her always. She had opened up a new and magic world to me, a world of light and love and laughter. And then, one night it happened. I was taking Rhoda home from the movies, and we were passing a billiard parlor. And there were several idlers in front of the place. They began saying things.
Hey, look at the giant.
Yeah. How's the weather up there, big boy?
Hey, girlie, what do you got there, Pike's Peak?
You wait here, Rhoda. I'll shut their mouths for them.
All right. I crack the skull of the next man who opens his mouth.
Please, Johnny, don't bother with
them. Yeah, but they're saying...
I know, but don't mind them. Let's keep walking.
No, I
won't.
Please.
All right.
Well, what do you know? The big baboon trying to throw his weight around.
I wanted to smash their jeering faces, knock them down. But Rhoda and I walked on to her mother's boarding house. And she was strangely silent as we entered the dimly lit foyer. She hadn't said a single word since we had passed that billiard parlor. I was vaguely disturbed. I took her in my arms, but she pushed me away.
No, please don't.
What's the matter, baby? Is it what those men at the billiard parlor said?
I don't know. It seems to me you're growing bigger. Right before my eyes.
Growing bigger?
Yeah. I thought at first I was seeing things, but now I know it's true. I know it's crazy. It's crazy, but when we first met, the top of my head reached your shoulders. And now...
Yeah? What about now?
Now it doesn't reach your shoulders anymore. You've grown bigger.
No, Rhoda, you don't know what you're saying. This is your imagination.
No, it's true. We'd better not see each other anymore. I'm afraid of you, John. You're too big now. Good night.
No, Rhoda, listen.
Don't touch me.
Please.
Oh, let go of my arm.
No, not until you hear what I have to say. Rhoda, I love you. Do you hear? I love you, and I'm not going to let you just toss me aside.
Let me go, you big slut!
Stop that! No, stop that screaming! You want to wake the whole street up! Stop it! Stop that screaming! Stop, I say!
Let me go!
Yeah.
You're hurting me! I can't breathe!
Rhoda! No.
Her lifeless body sagged in my arms. I'd forgotten my own strength. And in my fury, I'd strangled her. Like a man in a dream, I lowered her body gently to the floor and then turned to look at my reflection in the full-length mirror in the foyer. Yes! Yes, it was true.
The pitiless mirror reflected a giant. I had grown at least 6 inches. The XR3 had continued its work, was making me grow even now. Now I was a freak again. They stared at me again and pitied me. The beautiful, normal world I had so briefly enjoyed came crashing down over my ears. I ran out of the house like a wild man and into the street. Dr. Mead. Yes, I had to see him. At once, I ran to his office, avoiding the well-lit streets. And the light was on, and I prayed that he was in. I knocked on the door.
Yes, what? Good Lord.
Hello, Dr. Mead. You remember me?
Why, no, I can't say that I do.
Look up into my face, Doctor. The features are the same you looked down upon not so long ago.
Gogo the Midget.
No, Dr. Mead. It's Gogo the Giant now.
So it was you who stole the bottle of XR3 capsules from my desk.
Yes, yes, yes.
And this is the result. This and Petrov's murder.
He deserved to die.
It does not alter the fact that it still was murder.
Dr. Mead! I'm not here to argue law with you. I want you to save me. You've got to stop this growing process.
But how? What can I do?
An antidote. You must have an antidote.
I'm sorry, but I haven't. There just isn't any.
What? No antidote?
Oh, you're lying. I assure you, I'm telling the truth, Gogo. I was interested in making things grow, not making them smaller.
Yeah. Then I'm lost. There's no way out.
I'm sorry.
All my life I was a little man. I wanted to know what it was like to be a big man. Now I am big. Too big. Isn't that amusing, Doctor? Too little and then too big. Like the swing of a pendulum. I wish I were little again. As I knew what to expect then. I was used to that. Now they'll stare at me again. They'll laugh and jeer at me. Gorgo the Giant! Gorgo the Giant!
I think we'd better call the police, Gorgo.
Well, Father, that's my story. See, that's why I'm here in the death house. Now, tell me, am I evil?
No, my son. You have been unfortunate, but not evil. You have sinned, yes. But you have been sinned against, too, they're coming for you, Gogo.
I hear. And I'm glad.
Glad?
Yes. Glad. I don't mind dying now. This world, Father, what has it ever meant to me? But there, in the next world, there no man will be strange and all will be equal. And perhaps there I will find peace.
With firm and measured tread, the man who was first too small and then too big walks down the corridor. And the iron doors along the way rattle and clang like the chiming of the clock when it first struck 12 for
murder at midnight.
summer to be with us again, when death walks through the darkness with giant strides, and the clocks strike 12 for
Murder at Midnight.
Murder at Midnight, untuned to yesterday from the 3rd of May, 1946, a syndicated recording, episode number 3 of about 40 broadcasts produced for syndication and one of the better-preserved series from radio's golden era. This is an hour of science fiction, untuned to yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for X-1 with the story The Sense of Wonder, first heard on NBC on April 24th, 1956.
Countdown for blast-off. X-minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X-minus 1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents
X-1.
Tonight, The Sense of Wonder by Milton Lesser.
The huge ship sped endlessly through space on a voyage that had lasted 10,000 years, the journey which had no end. And for those aboard her, there was no other universe. To them, the ship was all. The ship is all. Rykood read the slogan embossed in raised letters of steel outside the door to the priest's compartment. The ship is all. His eyes wandered to the face of the young man standing next to him, his superior, Kreifer. The face had the empty, unquestioning expression that was typical of the people of the ship.
Are you ready, Kreifer?
I am. Enter.
Come in.
Well? I am Kreifer. Superior class, third level, compartment Y-51.
Welcome.
This is my attendant, Rykood.
Be welcome. Praise the ship.
Praise the ship.
What is your mission?
My superior schedule shows that today he is 25 units of age. He is ordered to appear before the priest of the third level to be given a woman.
You have the schedule with you?
Here.
Good. You have your certificate of health and fertility?
Show him the certificate, Rykood. Don't just stand there dreaming.
Oh, yes. Here.
Good. Return to your compartment. I will have the matron bring you a woman from the fourth level. Praise the ship.
Praise the ship.
Kreifer returned to his compartment, followed by Rykood. There was no questioning in the mind of either of them. At birth, each of the people was classified as a superior or an attendant, and the coded marking of his schedule was tattooed on his right arm. Both of these young men were 25, strongly built, and tanned from constant exposure to the health rays in the ship's conditioning room. Kreifer wore the loose-fitting robe of a superior. Rykood wore the tight trousers and shirt of an attendant. They entered the comfortably furnished compartment.
Kreifer?
Yes?
What do you suppose she'll be like?
What difference does it make?
Don't you even wonder about it?
I wonder about nothing. The ship is all. Praise the ship.
Well, naturally, but still...
Rykood... We've been together as superior and attendant ever since the nursery. As an attendant, your entire purpose in life is to keep me alive and productive, to perpetuate the people. I would hate to have to part with you now.
To part with me?
Not of my own choosing, of course, but sometimes I detect what appears to be a strain of unorthodox thinking.
Really? I was not aware of it.
I am not entirely aware of it myself. Not enough for me to report you. However, I must warn you that if it should increase, I will have to send you for therapy.
Well, I assure you there'll be no need for that. I've never deviated from the schedule. I have never disobeyed the buzzer.
I am merely observing, asking questions like, Don't you even wonder? This is the first step to unorthodoxy.
I shall watch myself for signs of it.
Good. Ah, the eating buzzer.
Your schedule calls for a massive dose of multivitamins.
Fine. Prepare it in the green vegetables today.
Today is a starch day.
Oh, I'd forgotten.
We could just skip it today.
Record.
Well...
Of course, skipping the vitamins for one day is a permissible deviation, but I shall have to report for punishment tomorrow.
Well?
Skip the vitamins.
I knew we would. You've never missed a permissible deviation yet.
It's your influence that makes me do it.
And you always blame it on me.
That's what attendants are for.
Yes, I know.
Now, that must be the matron with the woman. Open the door. Maintain the utmost dignity, please.
Yes?
Is this the compartment of Cryfer, third level, Y-51?
Yes.
I am matron of the woman's level.
Enter. I am Rykood, Cryfer's attendant. This is Cryfer.
I have brought a mate for you. This is she.
Be welcome. Praise the ship.
Praise the ship.
Her name is Aelin.
Welcome, Aelin.
I am most happy to be here. Praise the ship.
Come. I will show you which compartment is to be ours. This way. There are five compartments in this suite, and ours will be this.
Will you take food, matron? Why do you look at me that way?
That mark on your forehead. You have always had such a mark?
Yes.
And you have another diamond-shaped on your right shoulder?
How could you know such a thing?
Your name is Rykood.
Rykood.
How like him you look.
How like whom?
Your father.
My what?
Of course, you could not know the meaning.
What do you say?
When you were born, like any of the people of the ship, you were taken immediately and placed in the nursery of the ship. You never knew who sired you, nor did they know you.
Naturally. It's according to the schedule.
Yes, it's according to the schedule.
I have a strange feeling toward you. I can't explain it.
What sort of feeling, Rykood?
As if we've met before. But that's impossible, of course.
Yes. Still, there have been cases... It is almost heresy to mention it, where a mother has been able to keep her child for a while.
Such a female would be turned over to the control chief and fed into the converter.
If she were discovered.
It is a criminal thing to do. It is said to warp the child so that he becomes a heretic at an early age.
Yes, it is very, very criminal.
Still, you say there have been cases?
Once there was a woman, it is said, an attendant, who managed to conceal such a child behind one of the forbidden doors for almost 3 years.
Behind the doors? It's unspeakable.
Very likely only a rumor.
It's shocking to hear of such things. Behind the forbidden doors.
You're shocked, and yet something seems to stir deep in your memory, perhaps.
Nothing.
You're certain?
Why do you speak to me thus, woman?
Come closer.
What is it?
Closer. Where there's no chance that we'll be overheard.
Well?
Rykood, you are that child.
I will not listen. I will not listen.
You are that child.
How could you know such a thing?
I am 70 units of age. 25 units ago, I was a matron of the nursery. This person came to me and told me of her child, which she had concealed in the space lock behind the forbidden door. She begged me to take it and place it in the nursery with the other children. I had been her attendant for many years, and we were close to each other. I did as she asked.
But are you certain this child was me?
I remember the marks upon it.
Then I am doomed.
Why doomed?
I have known my own parent. This accounts for the strange feelings that come over me sometimes.
What feelings are those?
A feeling... A sense of wonder.
Oh.
You seem pleased.
Rykood.
What?
Your superior returns, I cannot speak. But if you would satisfy this sense of wonder... I have a book which I will give you.
I cannot accept a book without the supervision of the ship's librarian.
Take this one. Keep it concealed. Here.
Take it
quickly. They're coming.
Well, what are you two whispering about?
I was merely explaining to your attendant how he must behave in the presence of your mate.
There is no need to explain. All is scheduled. Nothing is questioned. Praise the ship.
Praise the ship. I hope that your union will produce the optimum number of children. I'll leave now.
Aelin.
Yes, Cryfer.
Your duties will be very simple. Rykood will teach you how to prepare my meals, and you will memorize my schedule. In 3 months, he will be freed from service as my attendant, and he will report to the second level to find a mate in the attendant class.
Yes, Cryfer.
It's time for my health treatment. Teacher Rykood.
Yes, Cryfer. Come here. Closer. where I may examine you. This is Cryford's schedule. You will memorize it.
Yes.
Here is a list of permissible deviations.
Oh, I am familiar with it, naturally.
I see. I was not aware of what training you received on the women's level.
The matron trained us well.
Good. You have been with the matron a long time?
Ever since I left the nursery.
I see. What is she called?
Mara.
Mara? Tell me, did she ever speak to you of a sense of wonder?
Are you of the control police?
Certainly not.
Then you should know better than to discuss feelings.
I'm sorry. I thought perhaps...
What's that?
The change bell. There has been some change.
It frightens me. What does it mean?
I don't know. I heard it only once before. When the ship passed very close to a red planet, there was a shower of stars, and the ship seemed to shake, and the change bell rang. We were all summoned to the priest and told that we must undergo a test for radioactivity.
What are we to do now?
Rikert, Aelin, quickly. It is the change bell. We are all summoned to the priest of our level. Quickly.
Within a few moments, the people of the third level of the ship were assembled in the area outside the compartment of Chul, the priest. They stood there trembling, listening in panic to the clangor of the change bell, not daring to wonder what it meant, but aware that something different had happened. Something different.
I'm frightened.
Hush! The priest is coming.
The ship is old. Praise the ship.
Praise the ship.
Listen to Chul, your priest. I have just been in contact with the chief priest of the ship.
Ah.
This is what I have been given to say. For 10,000 years now, ever since the ship began the voyage, which has no end, we have lived as one people following the schedule. In those years, the change bell has rung only twice. On one occasion, it was to announce a change in the schedule.
Oh.
For the preservation of the people of the ship following the epidemic. On another occasion, the ship passed close to a radioactive explosion, and it was feared that we had become dangerously activated. Now the change bell has rung again. You wish to know the reason, naturally. I am given to tell you there has been a change in the sound of the motor. There is no cause for alarm. The priests have consulted the book, which no man may see save the high priest. And we have learned that there is in the book a provision for a change in the sound of the motors. The book says, when the ship shall enter into the orbital pool of its destination, the motors will change in sound due to the increased anti-gravity components. A study is being made to interpret the meaning of the word destination, which was lost some 4,000 years ago and has always been a subject for much controversy. But this need not concern you. Suffice to be reassured that the change in the sound of the motors is a part of the scheme of things. Return to the schedule. The ship is all. Praise the ship.
The ship is all. Praise the ship.
On his way back to his compartment, Rikert stopped for a moment in front of the forbidden door which led to no one knew what, and listened to the sound of the motors. Yes, it was true. There was a new sound. It was frightening, and yet at the same time it made Rikert's heart leap with expectation. He looked at the forbidden door again and read the warning.
No unauthorized persons permitted through this door.
Attendant?
Yes.
What's your name and compartment?
Rikert, attendant to Cryfer, third level, Y-51. Who are you?
Graf, control police. Why do you loiter outside the forbidden door?
I was merely reading the warning, trying to impress it upon my brain.
Is there a need to impress it? You have doubts?
Well, no. No, of course not.
Then why bother to impress it? If you have no doubts, there is no need to impress it.
Well, I was merely... You see, I am engaged in the training of a mate for my superior. I wish to make certain that she knows every jot and line of the warning.
Has she doubts?
I'm sure she does not.
Then why impress the warning upon her? It should be sufficiently impressed upon her since birth.
Well, I was merely...
You were merely loitering, eh? Tell me, Rikert, do you ever wonder what is behind the forbidden door?
Never.
Are you perfectly content?
Perfectly.
Good. I'm going to enter your name in my report as a warning. See that it is not repeated.
I will see.
Return to your compartment.
I will return. Praise the ship.
Praise the ship.
Rikert went back to his own compartment. He tried to push the events of the day out of his mind. It was almost too much to cope with. First the mate for Kreiper, then the news of his birth, now the change in the sound of the motors, and the book. Rikard lay inside his bunk, drew the curtain, and took the tiny ancient plastic book from his trouser belt. He opened it and began to read.
It was thought advisable to keep from the passengers on the ship the fact that their voyage might end in catastrophe. Forced to leave the Earth because of its radioactivity following the three wars, the inhabitants of the ship, to all intents and purposes, became the inhabitants of a new world. The ship was their world. The organizers of the expedition felt it would be cruel to inform them that the ship's navigation machinery had been set in a series of ever-increasing circles and then ever-decreasing circles, so that in 10,000 years, the ship would return to Earth. There was the possibility that Earth would no longer exist, or that the radioactivity would have made it uninhabitable, even if the remaining humans hadn't managed to explode it. Therefore, the ship became all. Even the word destination was eliminated. If it were known that I had chronicled this account, I would most certainly be executed and the book destroyed. Most likely it will pass into legend and be disbelieved anyway, just as fairy tales and even biblical accounts have become tolerated but disbelieved by many who were...
The sleep buzzer sounded and Rikard's eyes closed automatically. Ordinarily, the people of the ship did not dream. It was considered a sign that therapy was needed. Tonight, Rikard dreamed.
Rise! Rise! Dress! Dress! Eat! Eat! Raise the ship! Rise! Eat! Dress! The ship is all!
Rikard!
No.
Rikard!
What?
Shh.
What is it?
You've been dreaming. I heard you and came in to see what was troubling you.
Where's Kreiper?
He sleeps like the dead.
I was dreaming. Aelin, look at me and tell me the truth. Do you ever dream? Do you?
Yes.
I knew it. I could tell it by looking at your eyes.
But you mustn't tell anyone.
I won't. You were very close to the matron, were you not?
Yes.
Did she ever read to you?
Read?
Did she ever read from this?
Where did you get that?
She gave it to me.
Then you must be one of the trusted ones.
Who are the trusted ones?
Some of us. The women who were with the matron since we were very small. We've been trusted by her to hear the reading of this book.
I see.
But if anyone found out...
I know.
Rikard?
Yes?
I feel very strange.
I too.
What is it?
I don't know.
Sometimes, after the matron had read to us from the book, I would have this feeling, strange and frightened. And she would comfort us.
Comfort? What does that mean?
She would put her arms around us.
And did that comfort you?
Yes.
How terribly strange.
Rikard?
Yes?
Comfort me? Put your arms around me.
Aelin.
Please, will you?
Yes. Yes, yes.
On the following morning, when Kreifer went to the conditioning room, as prescribed by the buzzer, Rikard drew Aelin over to the spaceport and slid aside the protective shield.
Look.
I am looking.
Tell me what you see.
I see the stars and space.
Look closely. Do you see nothing unusual?
I so seldom look through the spaceport.
I'll tell you then. Look there. See that one star, so big and so bright that it hurts your eyes?
Well?
I've been watching it. It is growing larger each hour.
Stars do that.
Never has one been this large.
What difference does it make? The stars exist only as pictures in the glass of the viewport. They're not real. The ship is all.
That is what we are told, but perhaps it isn't true.
What?
Perhaps these stars do not exist only in the glass of the viewport. Perhaps they exist beyond the viewport.
I don't understand.
Let me say it this way once and forever. Perhaps, Aelin, the ship is not all.
Rikard, your heresy frightens me. Rikard, hold me close. It frightens me even to look at you. Oh, Rikard, you mustn't even think it.
I do think it. I believe it. I believe the ship is not all.
And I believe you are a candidate for the converter.
Crifer.
Don't move, Rikard, or I'll blast you into dust. It is bad enough for an attendant even to touch his superior's mate, but to couple it with the ultimate heresy. There is nothing but death in this.
Crifer, I beg of you.
Stand aside, Aelin. I'm going to finish this heretic. Now, Rikard.
Have I killed him?
No, he's just stunned.
Oh, Rikard, what can we do?
I don't know. I...
Rikard, the change bell again. Something's happening.
I know what has happened. Come, we'll go to the priest.
What about Crifer? He'll have us killed.
No, it's too late to think of that. Come. Come, Aelin. Stand close to me. The priest is entering.
Silence! Once again, the change bell has sounded. There has been another change. Doubtless you all felt the shock and the vibration a moment ago. I am informed that the motors have stopped. Silence! However, once again, there is no need for any panic or alarm. We will continue to live our lives just as before. The only thing that has changed is that the motors have stopped and that the view in the viewports has changed. Behold. The view in the viewports has been changed from the stars to a garden. That is all there is to it. The book makes mention of the fact that the view in the viewports is changeable. Go back to your compartments and resume the schedule. The buzzer will be your guide as always. The ship is all.
The ship is all.
Wait! No, I have something to say. Listen, this is what I have to say. The ship is no longer all.
Seize him!
Keep back. I have my superior's ray gun. I will destroy any who move to seize me. Listen to what I have to say. The view in the viewports is not just a garden. It is the destination. It is the earth. Don't you understand me? We have arrived. We have reached the destination. The journey is over. We can leave the ship and go out into the garden. Fools, can't you understand? Watch the viewport. Watch it. The viewport is broken. I've shattered it. You can go out. Feel the air rush in. Smell its fragrance.
Why could they don't move? They don't understand.
Seize him. Kill the heretic. Kill him.
Why could they're moving toward us?
Run. Follow me quickly.
After him. Death to the heretic.
Rikard and Aelin ran down the long steel corridor with the crowd on their heels. After a few moments, they came to the forbidden door of the control room.
Aelin, quick, in here.
Rikard, it's forbidden.
I'll have to blast the lock. Quickly, now come. Now, help me close the door. Now the bar. We're safe in here for a while. Not even the priest can make them come in here afterwards. It'll take them time to figure out what to do.
I could look. Look at the machinery. It's frightening.
We're in the control room. It tells about it in the book. You see this big machine here? There was a drawing in the book. This is the machine that controls the buzzer.
Just a simple machine like that?
Yes, a simple machine. Stand back.
What are you going to do?
Do? I'm going to smash it. Now they're going to have to find a way to live without the buzzer.
Rikard, they're breaking down the door.
Come with me.
Where can we go? There's nothing except the ship.
No, there is more than the ship now, Aelin. There's the earth. The cool, green earth. I'm going to smash the viewport. Come on. We're going to leave the ship.
Rikard, I'm frightened. Put your arms around me.
There's nothing to be afraid of. Come, Aelin. Take my hand. Here is the earth. and it is ours.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features a story by F.L. Wallace titled Mesereau Loves Company. When Marcus Mesereau set out on his mission to Earth, he was driven by pride and indignation, plus a practical reason. But if he'd known what lay ahead, he might have decided to let bad enough alone. Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand today. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you The Sense of Wonder, based on a story from the pages of Galaxy written by Milton Lesser and adapted for radio by George Lefferts. Featured in the cast were James Monks, Bill Quinn, Edwin Jerome, Vera Allen, Rita Lloyd, Joe DeSantis, and Dick Hamilton. Raymond Edward Johnson was the narrator. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production.
X-1, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 24th of April, 1956 on NBC. And that wraps up this hour of Sci-Fi on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from the golden age of radio. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Livonier. Thanks for tuning in.